Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ. Five new cases of pertussis, also known as whooping cough, have been reported in area schools this week, according to the San Diego County Health and Human Services Agency. The new cases include a student at Maryland Avenue Elementary School in the Mesa here in East County. There have been 216 cases of pertussis reported in the county so far this year, compared to last year's total of 165 cases for the entire year. So the rate of whooping cough is on the rise. County health officials continue to remind parents to vaccinate their children, although all five new cases last week were among children who are up to date on their vaccines. Infants under 1 year old are especially vulnerable because they do not have the full five-dose series of pertussis vaccinations. Parents can obtain the vaccine series and the booster shot for themselves and their children through their primary care physicians. Local retail pharmacies offer vaccinations for a fee, and anyone who is not covered by a medical insurance plan can get the shot from a county public health center at no cost. A typical case of pertussis starts with a cough and runny nose, followed by weeks to months of rapid coughing fits that sometimes end with a whooping sound. Fever, if persistent, is usually mild. The disease is treatable with antibiotic, but can cause death if left untreated.
Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting at the San Diego Performance Academy. Today, my guest is Eric Knowles. Eric is a comedian. In fact, he was a finalist in the World Series of Comedy in Las Vegas a couple of years ago. He has headlined for some big-name comedians like Sarah Silverman and Zach Galifianakis. And now he's the headliner. He's got others opening for him, and he lives right here in East County in Spring Valley. Welcome to the show, Eric.
That's right. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So how did you get into comedy in the first place? Were you the class clown growing up? Or
well,
what?
There's the million-dollar question. Yeah, I really, yes, I was the class clown, I guess. I always felt kind of pigeonholed into it. My parents called me a comedian before I even knew what it was. Stop being a comedian. You're a little comedian, aren't you? I thought they meant like a lizard, like a chameleon or something. I really didn't even understand it until I finally understood, and then it just kept happening over and over. Like, you're going to be a comedian. People would proclaim it like it was a prophecy. Eric, you're going to be a comedian someday. And I'd be like, okay, but can I have some candy now? Like, what's going on?
There you go. Trick or treat.
I mean, really, I'm living my dream. Really, it's something. I mean, I've always had I would join the Marines shortly after high school.
Yeah, tell us about your experience.
I've had some of those dreams, but in the back of my mind, I've always really thought that I'm supposed to be, I think I can just tell jokes to the world.
So how was it being a funny guy in the Marines? How did that work out?
Oh, man, that was hard. That's how I got to San Diego. 1998, really? I came out to San Diego for a Marine Corps boot camp, mm-hmm. and instantly realized that this was going to be tough for me. it's just I have trouble not laughing and giggling,
and that's pretty serious stuff.
I was in trouble most of the time throughout boot camp for laughing or for making other people laugh, and all through the Marines I really had a lot of trouble. I got busted down, like I lost rank three times.
Uh-oh.
While I was in, like, I got out honorably because they liked me. They enjoyed me being around. They just had to do their job. Like, they were like, that was hilarious, Knowles, but we got to write you up on that one. That's completely unacceptable. Like, I just had a lot of trouble. But a lot of fun.
And then I hear that you got your first debut on stage. It was actually a command performance in the Marines. Tell us about that.
That's right. It was had Y2K material. So it was 99 to 2000. It was that year turning to 2000. Mm-hmm. I had gotten in trouble again for making everyone laugh in the shop where I worked at Miramar. And so my sergeant, he knew about this squadron Christmas party coming up with a talent show. And it was what we called mandatory fun day. It was not fun, but it was mandatory that we all be there and pretend that it was fun until it was time to leave. It was that sort of event that nobody really wanted to be at. And they were going to have a talent show.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah. So I was ordered to enter the talent show. He just told me, Knowles, I entered you in the talent show as a stand-up comedian, and you're going to do 5 minutes.
Just be funny or else.
Be funny, or that's your punishment, or else you're going to clean the shop for the rest of the year, or whatever it was. And so I had about 2 weeks to prepare, and he thought that this was going to be my punishment, and that I would be mortified, and, you know, I would probably get stage fright or then learn my lesson. But I took the 2 weeks time to just prepare, and I wrote material, and I just wrote and wrote.
So what kind of material did you present?
I basically just roasted the chain of command. I started with him, and I made fun of him for, I don't even remember what. I mean, it wouldn't be funny now. I mean, I was talking to people who knew them. So these were all inside jokes, basically. And then I went to the staff sergeant, and then I made fun of him, and I made fun of the gunnery sergeant, and then the first sergeant, and the sergeant major, and then all the officers, all the way up to the commanding officer.
Wow.
I just roasted everyone and had everyone laughing.
And they must have been good sports. They didn't send you out on, minesweeping duty or something.
They were good sports. And as a matter of fact, my chain of command was actually pretty supportive of it. They had put me in touch with a Marine who was a drill instructor and who was already a professional comedian as well. He had been on television, on BET and some other things. But then there was really a few more years until I did stand up professionally again. I did stand up kind of on an amateur level, I guess you would call it, just in the barracks with a microphone and a PA. And the guys would gather around, Knowles is going to do his thing, he's going to tell jokes. And I would have a little crowd there. And I did that about once a month or whenever the spirit moved me.
And then when you got out of the Marines, you were here in beautiful San Diego and you decided to stay on.
That's right. Why wouldn't I? San Diego is just beautiful. I mean, I'm from Southeast Texas where it's beautiful sometimes. Like the sunsets are nice.
I've got relatives in Southeast Texas. Yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful most of the time out there, but it's beautiful all the time here.
If you're a rattlesnake or a scorpion, maybe.
Oh, yeah, every now and then. Yeah, but I love San Diego, and being a comedian in San Diego has just been an absolute thrill for me and a huge benefit. A lot of people don't realize that there is even a stand-up comedy scene in San Diego itself.
Yeah, let's talk about
much
that.
Much less East County. There are plenty of shows in East County.
I was going to say, growing up, I sure don't remember much comedy. It was a big deal when the comedy club came to San Diego.
Right.
To what degree is San Diego really emerging as a go-to place for comedians?
You know what? I'm probably at the forefront of this, and I'm going to position to see it first, but I'll let you know what's coming. San Diego is going to be a huge hub for stand-up comedy, if not live entertainment altogether. But stand-up comedy has really grown in this town. When I first started about 8 years ago, there were enough places to where I could get stage time, open mic stage time, about 3 to 4 nights a week. And now new comics who are coming out can get up two times in a night, 7 nights a week.
Wow.
At different places.
Really
between coffee
scene.
Shops and bars and restaurants and comedy clubs and open mics and that sort of thing. Kind of on a national level right now, all eyes are turning towards San Diego.
And why is that?
Because a lot of San Diego comedians are gaining a little bit of notoriety right now, getting on TV, starting to get little TV spots, which is normal.
Can you name a couple of them that have gone on to the big time?
Sure. I don't know about big time, but I'm saying it would be big time to me. I haven't gotten on TV yet, but a lot of my friends, like Jimmy O Yang, has been on Two Broke Girls. Mike Ulla is a fresh face in San Diego, funny comedian. Mike Ulla, he was just also on Two Broke Girls. Just a lot of TV stuff. I've had some friends on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Some friends getting their spots on The Tonight Show and Craig Ferguson, that sort of thing. I mean, in the past couple of years, I would dare say there's probably been about a dozen to 15 comedians who got their start in San Diego.
So it's a pretty good training ground. Now, what's so funny about San Diego audiences? What is it about our region that's attracting so many people to come out and watch comedy?
That's kind of what the gatekeepers of the industry are wondering right now. And it's I can tell you exactly what it is. I've benefited from being a comedian in San Diego for this long. And I'd also like to say that I've had a lot of opportunity and a lot of pressure to move to L.A., to go to L.A. Now you're funny. You've gotten funny in San Diego. Now go to L.A. and get famous.
Wow.
But I have really just kind of resisted that because I love San Diego so much. And here's why. And here's to answer your first question.
Okay.
Why are people looking at San Diego now? Because San Diego has some of the greatest, the most diverse audiences. Hardly any of us are from here.
That's true.
Anymore. Are you a native?
Actually, I am. I'm a rarity.
You are.
An endangered species, I think.
You're a unicorn out here.
Yes. Yeah.
No, there are quite a few natives, for sure, but most people come from someplace else for some reason or another.
Well, you're right. I mean, we've certainly long been a draw, obviously, for Latino immigrants from Mexico
Absolutely.
And South America, Central America. But more recently, a lot of people don't know that San Diego has become the number one city for refugees, bringing in more refugees from around the world than any other city
wow.
in America. A lot of them from Iraq and the Middle East, a lot of them from the East African
oh, for sure.
countries. So
that makes a lot of sense.
It is very diverse.
Yeah, so we do. We have a cross-section of America and sometimes from the world even, people from all over the world. And think about it from the standpoint of a comedian, a young man or woman who's just trying to learn comedy and mm-hmm. learn the nuts and bolts and the fundamentals mm-hmm. of how do I make a joke. And each night he's got an audience from all over the nation, from people from Wisconsin, people from California, natives from California,
that's true, tourists
people
from
the South, people from the Midwest, people from Canada and Mexico and mm-hmm. and China and everywhere. And we have to learn to make all of those people laugh all at once.
You better be funny.
So we're unwittingly becoming nationally palatable. In a way, if those words work
yeah.
together.
Yeah. Now, what do you do when you first walk into the room and there's an audience? Do you kind of check them out, or do you?
I do.
You tailor the jokes a little bit depending who's out there.
I tailor the delivery for sure. I always have an idea of what I want to say. I don't let the audience steer me. The job of the comedian is to kind of be an MC to steer the audience, and so I always know what I want to say to them.
What advice would you give to somebody listening to the show who might want to get into comedy? How do they start?
My advice to anyone who would want to get into stand-up comedy right now would be to choose something else. Find something else. Ask yourself these questions. Do you like the friends that are around you and your family and your spouse, if you have one? And if you like that, then find something else. But if you don't, do stand-up comedy, because it's a brutal process. I mean, it really is. I'm kind of being funny, and I'm kind of being real, too. Becoming a stand-up comedian, it certainly starts as a hobby, at least as far as your friends and family are concerned. Because who in their right mind would really quit their day job? I quit my day job. I was a helicopter mechanic after I got out of the Marine Corps mm-hmm. down at North Island. I worked as a civilian for the Department of Defense. I did that for about 5 years while also doing stand-up comedy, you know, on an amateur level. Mm-hmm. And it kind of got serious, and I thought, maybe I can make something of this. And I had to make that decision. Should I choose this job with stand-up or with job security in retirement, being a mechanic, or should I chase this dream and try to be happy?
And yeah, so and I chose now this. You're living the dream.
I'm living the dream. I've been broke ever since, and I'm as happy as I've ever been. Seriously, it's a crazy journey, but that looks crazy to squares, to normal people.
So what are some of your themes in your comedy routine? What do you say that makes people laugh?
I've gotten to a point in my journey of stand-up comedy where I'm just trying to tell my life. I've stopped calling it my act, and I'm calling it my story, because mm-hmm. you don't have to memorize the truth. So I'm just... Mostly I talk about how I came to San Diego, kind of the same stuff we've mm-hmm. been talking about here, how I got here, my experience in boot camp in San Diego and being in the Marines in San Diego, and then since I got out and of being a comedian and of all the odd jobs that I've held in San Diego for short periods of time.
So things that people can really relate to.
I'm a dad now. I'm a dad and a stepdad. Right. I'm a dad of one and a stepdad of three, so I have four at home.
Mm-hmm.
Just being a stepdad, I think, is something that a lot of people can relate to that sure. I don't hear a lot of people talking about it. You don't see a sitcom about a great stepdad. But we're out there. You know, there's some bad ones, too. But that's because it's a hard thing that we do. And I think there's a lot. I'm finding that there are so many adults out there who come up to me after the show and it's like, hey, man, I'm a stepdad or a stepmom. And thank you for saying what we go through. It's hard to love something that you didn't make.
Yeah.
But we do.
Well, that's great. Now, where are some of the places in East County where people can go to hear you and to hear other comedians? What are the happening spots for comedy?
Absolutely. There's some great spots. One of my favorite spots, only because I live close to it. Mm-hmm. Not only, but it's a great little spot. I go on Thursdays to Shooters in Spring Valley. It's off mm-hmm. Hamishaw Road.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just an open mic on Thursdays. So
cool.
It's where I go to just kind of be with my comedian friends. It's very supportive. I'll work out some new material. Here's what's going on in my life. Those shows can be very, very fun to watch as long as you keep in mind what you're watching. It's not a professional show. You know, you're not going to get your money back. It's a free show, I'm pretty sure.
It's a lot of improv, maybe.
Yeah, a whole lot of that. Fun. But it's really fun. There's the Main Tap in El Cajon that has shows.
Got some others here. Space Bar in La Mesa.
Space Bar in La Mesa. Mm-hmm.
Press Box down in Rancho San Diego.
That's right. And
the Vine, is that, where is the Vine?
I think that's out Alpine or Descanso area, even out out the 8.
Descanso Junction, Viejas. A lot of new, a lot
Viejas,
of places.
I opened for John Lovitz out in, at Viejas a couple of years ago.
Wow.
They bring in some good names out there. Yeah, but just on a local level, I really support, or I enjoy supporting the smaller local businesses. That's that's just my kick. I'm not saying you have to do that. But.
Yeah, I think it's a nice little
You guys do whatever you want, but I go local. I like the small places. I like to go to the little bar gigs and actually experience San Diego. I like it. I like those old buildings, those buildings that have been here for a long time. Yeah, and I like to think of San Diegans 50 years ago sitting in this place and drinking a beer out of a weird glass that we don't use anymore. Or, you know,
there you go.
You know, there's so much history here.
Do you think maybe it has something to do with, you know, with the economy and tough times, and people need something to laugh about?
It has everything to do with that. Absolutely. I mean, just look at, pick up a newspaper and none of it's funny. I mean, reading a newspaper makes you feel a certain way, and we can't feel that way all the time. Mm-hmm. You got to have a laugh, and that's where comedians come in. Comedians have been around ever since there's been spoken language, I'm sure. I mean, we're the, and this is kind of a lofty definition, but I like it, and I think it's true. I think comedians are the modern day philosophers of our time. I mean, who else puts things in perspective for us anymore besides stand-up comedians?
You know, it's true. We've all watched, say, Jon Stewart, and sometimes you feel like you know more about what's happening in Washington when you watch Jon Stewart than when
you
read the newspapers.
It's so much easier to understand and to accept the information you're being given when you're being made to laugh, when you're seeing it from the angle of, if you can laugh at it, then it's not important enough to cry about, basically. And it makes you recategorize things in your brain a little bit. Well, this isn't that bad anymore because I laughed about it. So I can put it over here in the that's okay section of my brain.
Very well said. It's certainly, they said laughter's the best medicine. So if people want to come see you, Eric, or they want to follow you, find out where they can find you in any given week, where would they do that?
I think Twitter would be the best way. I'm not online. I have 4 kids, so I'm online that much, as often as I can be, with 4 kids and a full career.
So what's your Twitter handle?
Twitter is the best one. It's just at Eric Knowles. It's E-R-I-K and Knowles, K-N-O-W-L-E-S.
Very good. We all hope to come out and take
a
look.
Absolutely. I hope to see some of you out there.
There you go. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks
on KNSJ.
This is Ed Barena with East County Magazine and KNSJ. San Diego supervisors have unanimously voted to support federal legislation to eliminate the widow's tax on spouses of military members killed in the line of duty. Supervisor Dave Roberts introduced the resolution along with Supervisor Bill Horn. Roberts said, quote, "At issue is the practice of federal agencies that place deductions upon military spouses' compensation while not placing those deductions upon that of civilian employees. That's just not fair," end quote. Currently, military widows and widowers receive monthly payments under the Dependency and Indemnity Compensation Plan through the Department of Veterans Affairs. In addition, some military members have paid to buy supplemental insurance through a survivor benefit plan, but their surviving spouses have been shocked to learn that their survivor benefits are reduced by the $1,200 a month payment amounts made by the VA. Kathy Prout, whose husband was killed in a military plane crash, told supervisors that about 35,000 surviving spouses receive no survivor benefits because of this deduction. She added that, quote, "The military widow is the only category of survivor in the entire federal government that incurs this offset." In Congress, the Military Surviving Spouses Equity Act, H.R. 32, now has nearly 200 co-sponsors in the House, and a similar bill is being introduced in the Senate to repeal the widow's tax and restore the benefits for survivors of those who died serving our country.
Almost a million people go missing in the United States a year. Many are found, but there are just as many that are not, and over time, they are forgotten by all, except for their family and friends who struggle to keep the voice of their missing heard. But now, they no longer stand alone as we hear their cry, and we will join them and reach out through the airways to become one voice. We are their family, We are their friends. We are their voice. The voice for the missing. Hello everyone, and welcome to the East County Magazine Radio Show, and this is Jerry Dean for Missing Persons of America. We have a great guest today, straight from a private investigation firm, that is going to answer questions about what PIs do when they go searching for missing people, and answer questions from Facebook fans. Let me start off by welcoming Victoria Conrique from ISC Investigations. Hi, Victoria.
Hi.
Victoria is a co-owner of ISC Investigations, which she founded with Irma Conrique, that is based out of Downey. Back in 2011, was it?
Yep, 2011.
You wanted to take the business to a new level, and after talking it over with Irma, you agreed to start working and researching missing person cases, which included parental abductions, sex trafficking, and teens, which a lot of people know as runaways.
Yes.
You work these cases from beginning to the end, and we want to know how you do it, how you're able to track people and find them. So I went to the Missing Persons of America Facebook fan page, and a lot of people sent me questions. They wanted to know about private investigators. And I'd like to start off the show by asking a question from me, though.
All right.
When someone goes missing, a family goes to the police and gives them information. Why should a family consider getting additional help from a private investigator?
Well, the one thing you have to consider is that when your child goes missing, you have to look into different avenues, such as, kind of being your own investigator, such as the mom, the dad, just the family in general. Law enforcement is definitely a great asset. However, they have their case files. They have their cases that they're constantly being swamped in, and if there's not that solid lead, what's going to happen is that case file is just going to continuously fall to the bottom. So by hiring a PI company, what we do is that we actually kind of go in and we kind of see what areas were not actually looked into. So we kind of have to start back from the very beginning.
So what are you able to do that the police cannot? And what can the police do that you cannot?
Well, obviously law enforcement, they're going to have more tools than we're actually going to be able to have. But the fact of the matter is that, kind of comes back to law enforcement and being able to work those cases. Law enforcement, they're on budgets, the economy. So they're only going to be allocated so many hours, such as a PI company. We know, okay, well, yes, of course, we have different cases that we have to worry about and to think about. But at the same time, we know that to us, this is going to be the end result, meaning that we want to work these cases so that way we can go ahead and we can hopefully be able to find that your child and have some sort of end result. The tools that we use, they're definitely going to vary. Some of the tools that we use, law enforcement has same access to. However, some of our information is going to be limited. One of the prime examples that I always give is sometimes people say, well, there's a sex offender who lives down the street. We can go ahead and we can run a background on him to kind of see what, the rest of his criminal history. It's going to give us some, but it's not going to give us all the additional information that goes along with it. Versus law enforcement, they can run him. They'll have everything, meaning from beginning to the very end.
What are you able to do that the police cannot? And what can the police do that you can't?
For starters, law enforcement is always going to be able to do much more than we can do. However, some of the things that we're able to do, meaning such as run certain reports and bring up certain documentation, we have access to some of the same things as law enforcement. However, the information that we actually get back is going to be limited. Versus law enforcement, they're going to be able to have, to pull up somebody's information and have everything from beginning to end. Versus a PI company, what we're going to do is that we're going to bring up their information, but it's going to be limited. They'll have information here, information there. And not only that, but law enforcement has much more, they have many more databases compared to what we actually have. But from a missing person standpoint, law enforcement, they're so limited in certain amount of allocated hours, I guess you could say, to actually work a certain case. Versus a PI company, we know that the family has hired us. So we have no other alternative but to make sure that we have those hours in. We have a paying customer. Versus law enforcement, of course, they have somebody who's paying as well, but this is all tax dollars. versus somebody literally saying, okay, here's money, so hopefully you can go ahead and, mm-hmm. and do more for us than what law enforcement can do. But there's still that correlation, meaning that we still have to be able to partner with law enforcement, and law enforcement has to be able to partner with us as well.
Oh, that was another question I wanted to ask. How do you approach the police? Do you call them up and say, I've been retained by the family to investigate a case?
Yes, we do. What we do is that once we actually receive that telephone call, we go ahead and we gather all the necessary information, meaning we go ahead and we get the case file number, which is going to be a lot of times the police file number, as well as that pertaining detective. Once we actually kind of have all of our facts, and that's when we go ahead and we call law enforcement. Unfortunately, law enforcement, sometimes they want to share information with us, and sometimes they don't. A lot of times, and I'm sure the parents can agree with this, is that we're going to get the same information that the parents do, such as this is an ongoing investigation, therefore we cannot share any information.
Mm-hmm. So that can be a little frustrating. But when you're out there investigating, you probably find a lot of things out maybe the police don't know.
We do. You know, in a lot of cases, once we call people, we call witnesses, they actually feel more comfortable speaking to us because we're not law enforcement. We call them up and we say, hey, all we want to do is have a general conversation with you. And because I'm the one who works the missing persons cases, you have a female calling a guy or a girl right away. They're going to feel more comfortable versus if it's a guy calling.
Mm-hmm. Do they come to you because they're frustrated with the police, or do they come to you to get more hands on the case so they can be looking for their missing person?
It's a little bit of both, but 9 times out of 10, it's because they're just frustrated. They don't know what's going on with their case. Law enforcement is not returning their calls. So there's a lot of frustration. Sometimes they feel law enforcement doesn't care about their case or about their loved one who's missing. So there's a lot of unanswered questions that the family wants to have answers to, but a lot of times you're going to have that detective who's going to be really hands-on. He's going to be very sympathetic and say, you know, I'm sorry, but we don't have any new leads. We're still working on the last lead, or we know we have not had time to get to it. I'm sorry. And then you're going to have those other detectives who they're just not going to call you back. So it becomes very frustrating for the family.
Yeah, I can see where it becomes frustrating. Or do you find that when you call them up to get information that they're pretty willing to share information with you so that you can go back to the party? Are they open to you being a third person coming into the case?
Sometimes it really all depends on the law enforcement, basically. A lot of times we have discussions in confidence, meaning that law enforcement says this cannot leak out into the public. Mm-hmm. And because of that, we have to respect that. And we have to tell the family as well. At times, law enforcement is going to give us certain information that we cannot share with you. Information that you yourself have been able to gather, you give that to law enforcement. But a lot of times, law enforcement's not going to follow up on that information because to them, they feel it's not credible. So everything that law enforcement feels is not credible, these are the things that we basically need to have.
That's
because to us, every information, every tip that you actually receive, it's credible to us until we can go ahead and rule that out and say, no, this isn't going to be credible.
Are we actually based out in Downey, California,
yes.
Which is L.A. County, Orange County?
We're on the border. We're on the border.
And you will get calls to go to cases, and maybe you probably go down to San Diego, maybe even go to El Cajon, maybe go to Anaheim. But can you investigate? If you hear that the case has moved to Michigan, for example, can you continue the case and go to the state of Michigan and investigate?
Yes. As a private investigations company, we're only licensed in the state of California. So If an investigation begins here in California and then it goes into, let's say, Michigan or Florida, we still have jurisdiction over that case. If somebody calls us up and says, I have a missing child in Florida, can you help me? We still can. However, we have to turn it from a PI into more of a consulting.
Mm-hmm.
So we can still do the same things. However, each state is going to be different, and because of that, certain information that we can obtain will be limited. That's when we actually use our overall networking, meaning that friends of ours who we have in Florida, we need to partner with them and say, hey, do you think you can run this for me? Can you think you can get me this information. So there's a lot of networking. So we don't have the available resource. We definitely will find it.
One of the most common questions that the fans brought up was the cost of a private investigator. They want to know how much you expect to pay, what the average rates are, and about what are you getting for your money?
Well, you have to be extremely hesitant when you actually want to go in and hire a PI company. You don't want to go and hire a PI company who does not work missing persons cases, because they're not going to know what to do. It's something that you kind of have to have the passion for, such as us. We have the passion to go and help families find their missing children. So we want to do this. And because of that, we are dedicated and we're devoted to this. When it comes to cost, you have to be extremely careful as well, because a lot of times people will nickel and dime you for every phone call, for every email, for every report, for every time they have to call somebody. They're going to nickel and dime you. I don't know what the average going rate is for missing persons, because we don't do it as an hourly. We actually have a flat fee, meaning that the family calls us, we gather the information, and then I say, okay, I need to go back to the drawing board. All of the fees that we actually have automatically include a search and recovery. Everything that we do is done a flat fee. So there's not going to be this, you know what, I'm sorry, I misquoted you. Oh. Once that contract is out there, it's signed, that's it. If we somehow, some way, overextend ourselves on the cost, then that's something we have to take up.
Are flat fees becoming very common, or are you a leader in the field with this?
You know, I don't know, to be honest with you. The reason why we do flat fees is, if you look at it from a general perspective, if you turn the tables around and if I was interested in hiring a private investigator company to help me with any particular case, I'm not going to want to be nickeled and dimed. Just tell me how much. I don't want to know that I'm going to call you and that call is going to cost me an extra $50. So we encourage flat fees. We tell everybody who calls in, I can't give you a price right now. I have to go back. And a lot of things have to go into consideration, meaning how many people. If this is a multiple case, how many people are missing? Where is the area? How much has already been done? How old is the case? Because the older the case, the longer it's going to take to do work. Because we have to start once again, all over again from scratch, and pull out everything.
When the family decides they're going to get a private investigator, is there any tips that you can give them, questions they should be asking to make sure they've got somebody that is going to be handling their case seriously?
Yes, the number one thing you want to do is that you definitely want to visit their website. If you go on their website and they don't show anything about working a particular case that you want to hire them for, then chances are they're not going to work that that particular case. Another thing you want to do is that you want to make sure that their PI license is up and in good standings, which whatever state you're in, you can actually visit the Private Investigations Board. You can punch in their private investigator license, and they'll tell you if they're in good standing or not. By law, in the state of California, I don't know how it is in other states, but in the state of California, the PI license number has to be on any and all documentation. So meaning that on our webpage, if you go directly to our webpage, scroll all the way down, you're going to see our PI license number listed. By law, we have to have that. Any sort of mailings or any sort of contracts that we sell, it has to have that. Not only that, but you also want to ask questions. You don't want to feel as if you're being a burden to them, because in all reality, we need to make sure that we're here for you. Granted, yes, we do have our own life outside of doing investigations, but you want to make sure that you know you can call your investigator. And they might not answer right away, but you want to know that, yes, they definitely will return your call, whether it's a text or it's a telephone call. You also want to make sure that you have schedule meetings with them, whether it's FaceTime, over the phone, because you want to make sure that you have this status update as well. You want to make sure that you can feel confident in your investigator. You want to make sure that you can call them anytime.
So if they want to get a hold of you, how would they find you?
They can actually go online and they can search the web and look up ISC Investigations, or they can always call us directly at our office. I can give our telephone number. Our direct line is 562-261-5556. and that will bring you directly into our office.
Well, this has been great. Thank you, Victoria. I really appreciate all this information. You answered a lot of questions that I didn't know about private investigating. I appreciate you taking your time to come by and talk to us.
Thank you.
Voice for the Missing is recorded on location at the San Diego Performance Academy Studios in Santee, with help from producer Dave Bramley, engineer Levi Mao, and all its fans. If you'd like to appear on the show, please contact us at facebook.com Missing Persons of America, or you can email us at voiceforthemissing@gmail.com. Title music provided by Akajules.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Gun rights advocates have launched a recall effort seeking to oust 8 California legislators who voted for gun control measures, including a bill that would have broadened the state's assault weapons ban and a bill that will outlaw lead ammunition. The measures were introduced to lower rising levels of gun violence and to protect wildlife from lead poisoning, supporters say. But opponents say such measures infringe on Second Amendment rights to bear arms and could negatively impact hunting. Those targeted by the recall efforts include two local legislators, Senator Ben Wesso, whose district includes part of East County, and Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez from San Diego. All legislators targeted in the recall effort are Democrats. Senator Wesso issued this statement in response. I stand by my vote record, which is consistent with the views of the majority of my constituents who support common sense changes to gun laws that do not erode Second Amendment rights. He said the measures will provide reasonable protections for safer communities in California, which will help curtail senseless gun violence in our state. In a letter to her supporters, Assemblywoman Gonzalez said, "First, I support the Second Amendment rights of responsible gun owners, but as a mother, I have supported reasonable efforts to curb gun violence in our communities. The gun lobby has long opposed even the most common sense efforts to prevent the violence we unfortunately see all over my district," she said, "and they will undoubtedly be instrumental in funding any recall against me." Gonzalez blamed the effort on the Tea Party and suggested an ulterior motive to oust minorities, noting that all of the candidates targeted are Latinos, although many more voted for the measures. The effort is instigated by Colorado activist Tim Knight, who led a successful recall efforts in Colorado against some legislators who supported gun control efforts there. In California, the organization leading the recall effort, Free California, listed Santee Republican Assemblyman Brian Jones among its supporters and posted a photo on their Facebook page of Jones standing with supporters holding a banner at a recall event. However, Jones later clarified that he does not support recall of specific individuals and believes that should be up to the voters. While Republicans and gun rights advocates are trying to flip control of the House in Colorado, in California, even if all 8 recall efforts were successful, the Republican Party is far from achieving control. Moreover, a field poll found that 61% of Californians polled say that they favor more gun controls, leaving recall organizers a tough road to climb.
This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ. 5 new cases of pertussis, also known as whooping cough, have been reported in area schools this week, according to the San Diego County Health and Human Services Agency. The new cases include a student at Maryland Avenue Elementary School in the Mesa here in East County. There have been 216 cases of pertussis reported in the county so far this year, compared to last year's total of 165 cases for the entire year. So the rate of whooping cough is on the rise. County health officials continue to remind parents to vaccinate their children, although all 5 new cases last week were among children who are up to date on their vaccines. Infants under 1 year old are especially vulnerable because they do not have the full five-dose series of pertussis vaccinations. Parents can obtain the vaccine series and the booster shot for themselves and their children through their primary care physicians. Local retail pharmacies offer vaccinations for a fee, and anyone who is not covered by a medical insurance plan can get the shot from a county public health center at no cost. A typical case of pertussis starts with a cough and runny nose, followed by weeks to months of rapid coughing fits that sometimes end with a whooping sound. Fever, if persistent, is usually mild. The disease is treatable with antibiotic, but can cause death if left untreated.
The La Mesa Term Limits Committee filed paperwork this week seeking voter approval for an ordinance that would limit city officials to 12 consecutive years in office. The group needs to collect 3,306 valid signatures in 180 days to put the measure on the November 2014 ballot. Vice Mayor Christine Alicio recently tried to get La Mesa City Council to put the ordinance on the ballot, but only Councilmember Ruth Sterling supported the motion. Alicio said, "If the council won't do its job, the people will get it done. That's the essence of our democracy." The La Mesa Citizens Oversight Group first suggested the idea last spring. One of its members, local merchant Bill Janes, commented that term limits remind politicians that they represent the public and not themselves. The proposed ordinance limits a person to three consecutive terms as either mayor or city council member, or any combination. It's modeled after the term limits law passed by voters in 2012 for the state legislature. However, this replaces the lifetime ban with a cooling-off period. Under the proposed ordinance for La Mesa, a person who serves three consecutive terms in office must wait 4 years before returning to office. The measure has drawn opposition from La Mesa Mayor Art Madrid, who said, "We already have term limits. It's called an election." Madrid has been serving as mayor since 1990 and has said he plans to run again in 2014.
Welcome to Real to Real. Every show, we will bring you authentic, independent artists. I'm your host, Dean Bruce, and I sit down every show with a diverse group of musicians, not only digging deep into the grit of the music-making process, but also bringing to you the real stories of these real artists. This is Real to Real. Good evening, everyone. We're hitting you again at night with a new band. I'm sitting in tonight with League of Liars. Say hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hey, hello, how you doing? Everyone.
Guys, it's been a pleasure having you in. We've sat around and talked for a little while. You're going to play some music for us, and I really can't wait to hear that stuff. But I really want to get down to how you guys became a band. So let's start with, you know, the beginnings.
Well, the band League of Liars came from the breakup of another band called Not Anymore. And myself...
Well, it is Not Anymore.
It is not anymore. Myself and Dave decided to put something else together. I had played prior with Tim, Rumble T, our drummer, and him and I clicked really well. Yeah, Tim?
Oh, yeah.
And after that, I started searching the local Craigslist, and
What were you looking for on Craigslist?
Our lead for me. Singer, because you don't want to hear me sing.
Yeah, so we're pretty much a product of Craigslist.
So you guys got together, answered a couple Craigslist ads in a questionable fashion. So we set the Wayback Machine to 2011. You guys coming off an award from the Del Mar Fair Music Palooza. And you guys go back into the Lockout Studio. Talk to me about your musical influences. Obviously, we all start someplace. We all have a strain of music that we attach our emotions to, that we want to sound like in a way. What's your guys' musical influences?
I love songwriters, people like Paul Simon and Tom Waits, and people that they can weave magic out of their words. That's what gets kind of like the fire going. Because my needle flickering.
I feel like all of a sudden we ended up into a fireside chat about...
Well, bravo, let me say it. The best you could ever ask for as a songwriter is to find a group of musicians that can play music in a way that, like, may not be like exactly what you think, but like is good. Like, exactly, they take you beyond what you can think it occurs, and like actually like interject kind of some new fresh blood, and actually like take that to the next kind of level. And I think that like with these gentlemen here, like they've managed to like, you know, not only like respect it and do it good, but like crank it up.
We talk about passion. We talk about organic structure in your music, and that's a good segue lead into the first song you guys are going to play for us tonight, which is Weld.
Weld is the worst day of your life being replayed to you in your head over and over at like this constant like can't stop loop.
Let's have you guys play Weld for us. I'm really excited about hearing
this one.
Looking
forward to it.
So everybody listening in Radio Land, this is League of Liars with Weld.
All right now, won't you please
All right, for those of you just joining us, I am Dean Bruce, and this is Reel to Reel, and I'm sitting in with League of Liars, and that was Weld. I honestly want to go into the next one. Like, normally I'm
ready to play. Let's talk some more, but now I just want to go to the next one.
Speaking of this. We're going to go into California.
Yep.
Which California has a little bit of a longer title, but we're on the radio, so we're going to shorten the title a little bit. Yeah. Take me through that one. Just like you did for the other one, let's talk about California.
The song is kind of like a modern retelling of Nina Simone. So the same way that Nina Simone's Mississippi was meant to kind of like call people out from their apathy. It's almost like, you know, like it's like when I was writing the song, it was almost like kind of like acknowledging the emptiness of what's currently going on and the desire to strive for something more.
Right.
But at the same time, it's just like almost like, you know, when you get to the end of the day, it's like California. Oh, the GD.
Yeah. And like Nina was great at just shaking it up.
She was great.
And it was, you know, there's comedians out there, like, you know, you think about all these different guys that are like shock, like they're doing it to get a shock.
Exactly.
And Nina was the epitome of that in a musical perspective. Like, she was putting out there to shock you into doing something.
No, totally.
And I get that out of this song. So that's why I'm so, like, that's why I just want to get to it.
Let's do it.
I'm going to shut my ego down and shut my voice down, and we're going to get into it. So, folks, get ready, because here's California.
We're rolling. California.
Well, knives and the smiles at the meat and them brand new wolves got the same old teeth, the same old teeth. A little water does a whole lot of drowning. Sit the priest in the temple of accounting. By all accounts, on belly of the beast, hell, they'll be lining up the fire for a triad of peace. A triad of peace. Mr. Midas got a real bad itch to get the golden shovel in a private ditch. But then again, ain't life a goddamn California. You can have it all. Consider that a warning. The night is young. The drink in your hand, and everybody knows that it's California. A little fish said in a big fish noise, I refuse to choose between words and a voice. Goddamn California, you can have it all. Consider that a warning. The night is young, the drink in your hand, and everybody knows. Everybody knows that it's goddamn California. You can have it all. Consider that a warning. The night is young. Drink in your hand, and everybody knows that it's California.
Yeah. For those of you just joining us, this is Dean Bruce. This is Reel to Reel. We're in the studio with League of Liars, and that was California. So 2011, San Diego County Fair Music Palooza People's Choice Award. 2010, IBEW's Battle of the Bands winner. Let's talk about where people can find you out. www.reverbnation.com/League of Liars. Check you out on Facebook, facebook.com/League of Liars. Guys, thank you very much for being in studio tonight with us. This is 89.1 KNSJ, the sounds of East County, Descanso, and all wonderful places out here in the world. I'm Dean Bruce, your host for Reel to Reel.
Reel to Reel is recorded on location at San Diego Performance Academy with help of studio producer Dave Bramley, executive producer Jerry Dean, engineer Levi Wong. If you would like to appear on the show, check us out at www.reeltorealsessions.com, facebook.com/reeltorealsessions, or you can email us at info@reeltorealsessions.com. Title music provided by Look Up Here.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.